Yo, 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 Thought Warriors. What is up?
Our learner is on.
It is I, Van Lathan Jr.
And it's me, Rachel and Lindsay.
Well, Rachel, Matt James.
No pleas. Are we going to dismiss with the pleasantries again?
We're not dismissing with the pleasantries. I just want to say that at the top. We can still have pleasantries. But okay. Isn't it ironic? Pleasantries. How was your weekend?
I had a really good weekend. I took a Saturday for me. I went and I got a massage, a lot of self-care. I got these feet taken care of. It's been a minute. And then I just came to the house. Very few Saturdays that I've had to just been able to just enjoy the house. Had a girlfriend came over. We had music. We just listened to drinks, laid out in the pool, and just chill.
Oh, huh.
It was not a party. I told my girlfriend she's about to leave and go out the country. And I was like, yes, you can come over and use the pool. Super chill. And then Sunday, I was in the Pride Parade.
I
gotta tell you, it was so much fun. I was with Project Angel Food, who's been in the community for 33 years, feeding this community. If you're not familiar with them, they started out feeding those that were HIV positive because people were too afraid to be around them. It's kind of like a Meals on Wheels. They deliver meals, but then they tailor the meals specific to people's dietary needs. Now they've expanded past just HIV clients, but then also just those that are sick and shut in that need food delivered to them. So it's really a beautiful thing that they do. I've been involved with them for a couple of years. So I was able to ride in their car, represent them. But it was so great to see so many people out and about cheering for equality, representation. There were like everyone was represented, but I loved seeing so many kids. And I got to tell you, there was this one moment where, and I love to see kids at a parade. I was wearing a tutu. I'd see little girls. They had their tutus. I was close enough to be able to speak to people and I had a microphone so they could hear me. So I like to talk to the kids. There was this one boy. He couldn't have been older than like 10. And
10 years old.
And, you know, like in t-shirt, kind of like basketball shorts. And I'm waving and I'm like, hi, hey, happy Pride.
Hey, how you doing, Jimmy?
I guess like he can see my hands. Like, right? He could see my nails and he's waving to me. And all of a sudden he looks at me and he puts his hand down to show me his nails are like mine. And it was just like, and he had like long, we had like similar colors. So I start showing him my nails. He's showing me his mom's like cheering him on, like, go take a picture with her. But then the car was moving too fast. And it was just.
So you didn't take the picture.
Don't focus on the wrong thing. For me, that moment stood out to me more than any other moment, just because I was like, that kid felt safe enough to show me that we were alive. Like he was so excited to show me his hands. And I just thought, I don't know what school is like for him. I don't know if he can wear his nails at school, but he just felt just to see, like, that's what this parade is for someone, a child to see themselves, someone that's like them to see themselves celebrated and loved and appreciated by all these people and that they're beautiful and equal to everyone else and represented. And I just like that moment stood out to me. The kid felt safe enough to be himself in that moment and almost cried. But I loved being there. I was honored to be able to represent, Project Angel Food and to be an ally to the community. So it was great. Made my whole weekend.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
You?
I didn't do anything like that.
Were you working?
I got back Saturday. Okay. And I slept all day Saturday. And then I got back. Me and Bozeman were just hanging out. And I ordered a pizza and a little comfort food. I ate the pizza. Not all of it. But then I gave Bozeman the crust. Bozeman was just hanging out. He's like, hey, Dad, I missed you. I'm like, that's the fuck I'm talking about, little bastard. You little fucking awesome dog. And then Sunday, I boxed. I boxed around a little bit. Boxed today. Just hanging out, you know? Just getting my bearings back. Trying to get a haircut. Couldn't do it. Got it today. You know what I'm saying? Angel Food.
Project Angel Food?
In the past. Well, no, not Project Angel Food. I'm moving on. Angel Food is a racist term. Not Project Angel Food is great, but Angel Food is a racist term.
I don't even know if I've ever heard anyone just say Angel Food, but
Angel Food Cake?
I'm not familiar with it.
You've never had angel food cake before?
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't even know what it looks like. You could line up four cakes in front of me. I wouldn't know which one was angel food cake.
Donnie, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
You've heard of angel's food cake, right?
No, I haven't.
You've never heard of angel's food cake?
It always makes me feel so validated when you call on Trudy or Donnie and they're with me.
To stand in agreement with Van.
It's like a really light and fluffy.
It's like not my vibe, but
okay.
Yeah, heard of
what color is angel? What color is angel's food cake?
It's light. It's like the color of cake.
It's white.
White. Yeah. Well,
now let me ask you a question. What color is devil's food cake?
Ooh. Isn't devil's food cake have all that shit in it?
It's a deep brown.
It's black.
What is it? I've never even heard of devil's food cake.
Angel food cake. Let devil's food up. Cake, black and white. White food cake is angelic and pure and for the niceness. Devil's food cake is for you niggas.
Isn't it just chocolate cake? I'm looking at it. Isn't it just chocolate cake?
Kinda. Why chocolate gotta be the devil?
I've never heard of.
Why white gotta be the angel?
Food.
You never heard of angel's food cake?
I've never heard of devil's food cake either, so there you go.
How in the world, man? But Donnie, you a straight buster. How you ain't never heard of no angel's food cake?
And
before?
Angel's food cake just looks like kind of like a pound cake.
Basically like a vanilla cake. Angel's food cake. You never had a pretty hair never made no angel's food cake?
No, pretty hair didn't make an angel's food cake. She makes a great pound cake, a great coconut cake.
Coconut cake.
Good you sweet. Like coconut? Dad does. Sweet potato pie.
Coconut is hit or miss for people.
She makes it for my dad.
Is angel hair pasta racist?
Let's move on to the big deal of the day.
Donnie brings up something. Is angel hair pasta? What are the most racist foods? What foods are the most racist? Brazil nuts.
I was about to say nigger toes. It's the number one thing.
It's the number one. Oh, by the way, on the show today, we have both Jared Hill from the Fanti podcast and Garcelle Bouvet, who we have great conversations with both of them. Is it Bouvet or Beauvais? I'm saying Beauvais.
Just to let you know. You said Beauvais.
I said Beauvais. Oh, she's amazing. I was intimidated by her otherworldly beauty. But angel hair pasta, I'm not sure about, Donnie. That's a good question.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Trudy has a story for everybody. Trudy has a story.
You do, Trudy,
jump on.
I do.
This is a surprise.
I didn't even tell you it before. So,
go ahead.
It's just an update on fighting. So, I didn't get in a fight, but I came really, really close. So my aunt is in town, and she's really crazy in like the life of the party and all that stuff. She's 71, and we were out at Mama Por Dios on Saturday, and she decided she wanted to keep the fun going, so we went to West Hollywood. So we went to Tom Tom, and we were sitting. I don't know if you guys have ever been there, but like the bar is in the middle, and then there's like tables on either side.
Okay.
So we're sitting close to like the entrance. We're one table away from the entrance. There's another group that's sitting at the table. We're just getting drinks, whatever. There's people at the bar. And then this girl decided that she was going to start dancing to the music. So she's twirling, she is spraying perfume and she chokes out the whole room. So nobody could breathe. My aunt's 71, she's choking, everybody's choking. And so I'm sitting the furthest away from the table. My cousin's back is to the table. So my cousin takes her jacket and she's like waving the air. Like, why would you like choke everybody out with your perfume? And so the girl like scoots by my cousin because there's like a mirror on the wall. And she was like, ghetto ass bitches never smelled, don't know what expensive perfume smells like.
So fighting
my
words.
Cousin is from Memphis, okay? This is my country cousin. And she turns around and it's up and it's stuck. So she's cussing the girl out. And then she like wanted to jump back, but she didn't all the way jump back. She was waiting for her friends to kind of jump in. So there was a guy that was sitting there and his back was to my cousin. And I thought he was going to pull her hair. So I had to stand up, go around the side. My cousin pushes the girl. And then we're just up in it, cussing them out. But then they walked away. Also, Ken, Lisa Vanderpump's husband, was there. And I was like, I ain't got time to get kicked out of Tom Tom and banned for life behind y'all ghetto bitches. So we didn't.
Is that where you, wait, you were at Tom Tom? Is that what you said? Yeah. I didn't catch that part.
You were at Tom Tom. Saturday.
Now.
So saw that? That was me, y'all. Me and my cousin. My country cousin from Memphis.
Sound like it was just cuz.
No, it was me too. Don't do that. It was me too. Because if my cousin told me, I was going to have to fight. But whole time, I was like, oh my God, is this it? Is this the moment?
So the B word was used? Throwing at y'all faces?
Bitches, to be exact.
And nobody got swung on? Y'all got
my
played.
Cousin Truth. Sister. I was far. I didn't know the ghetto ass bitches to the end. So my cousin like ran back to...
Hold on for a second. Hold on for a second. Let me get Ebony on the phone real quick.
Trudy.
Let's see how this same... Let's see how this you same don't situation would have gone.
You just fight. You just
this is the journey. We're an inch closer on my step.
You thought closer. Too long. That's why your cousin pushed her.
Let's see what Ebony would have done real quick. Hopefully she picks up the phone. My sister's the most violent person I know in the world. She's got a violent.
What's
wrong with $1,000 right now? I'm gonna spend $1,000 right now. Ebony, she ain't fighting nobody.
Except the phone company.
What the fuck? I'm gonna say, like, I got, hold on. I can't, she can't go.
It's don't not do it twice. In a row.
It's not gonna happen twice in a row. It could never happen. It might have been.
Hello?
Ebony, Ooh. You almost embarrassed Ooh. Yourself. Let me ask you a question real quick. First of all, you're on the podcast.
Hi, okay? Ebony.
You're on Higher Learning.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, Ebony.
Hi. So I was telling everyone, like, Trudy got in a situation where she went to a bar and this girl was spraying perfume everywhere and they started trying to fan the perfume because they didn't like it. And then the girl looked at them and said, ghetto bitches never smelled expensive perfume before. If someone looked at you and called you a ghetto bitch to your face, what would you do?
I'd slap the shit out of her.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Like, I'd probably knock the shit out of her because, first of all, you shouldn't be spraying in the club. That's trashy. Go to the bathroom, go outside. But you're going to say ghetto bitch. But I'm ignorant, though, so don't listen to me.
Right.
I don't have the intelligence to deal with that. Or I would turn around and say, I'd probably turn around and say, your mammy a ghetto bitch.
Right, your mammy. Talk your shit. Yeah, it's going to happen. So look, this is what we're going to do. Yeah. Put you on the first thing spoken out here. Trudy's going back.
Okay.
This girl's not getting away with this. Nobody treats my little sister. Her Trudy's 71-year-old auntie was there with them, and they got treated this way. Ebony,
I don't know.
We bring you out here. We're going to push a button on these people, right? We need you. The Terminator.
Look, I'm ready.
Yeah.
I'm going to go up in there. You know, Baton Rouge, we ready to fight just in general. So,
yeah.
You know, it's what the it's fuck fine. I'm talking
about. Yeah, yeah. Trauma. All your trauma. Think about all the bad things that have happened to us as kids. Trauma. Think about your trauma.
Trauma.
What's your biggest trauma, Ebony? Tell them.
My biggest trauma?
Yeah, what's your biggest trauma? What's your what's your greatest trauma in life? Tell them.
There's a couple of them, baby.
Yeah, no, tell them. Get deep.
But I would say.
Okay, I don't want to know. I'm just a joke. It's a joke. I don't want you. Don't talk about your trauma, baby. I love you to death. Happy birthday. I love you so much.
Is her birthday today?
No. Her birthday was the 8th. Like, don't tell them about your trauma,
Gemini,
baby. Don't tell
too?
Them.
Oh.
Ebony's a fucking Gemini. Ebony is the Gemini of all Geminis. She is a Gemini.
What the hell is that supposed to mean?
You know what it means. Did you go to that party in Baltimore? Okay, bye-bye. I sent Ebony this flyer for this party in Baltimore where it was like, it's free with a strap on, but like, if you come without a strap, you got to pay like $15. She didn't go. All right.
Ebony was so ready. You see what I mean, Trudy?
Trudy, don't say shit. Just get busy.
You know I gotta have my people, my squad, when they go down.
See, Trudy doesn't fight. Trudy doesn't fight.
The only thing I don't like about Trudy though is that like I feel like if Trudy fights once, she's not going to be able to stop herself. There's going to be too many fights. She's going to be like Will Hunting or something like that. We're going to have to bail her out of jail. All this. I feel like once Trudy lets the anger go.
First phone call. Both y'all better pick that.
Yeah. True. All right, we're going to take a break now. On the other side, it's time for a weenie roast.
This episode is brought to you by Max. The new HBO original limited series, The Sympathizer, is an espionage thriller and cross-culture satire that follows a communist spy during the final days of the Vietnam War and his new life as a refugee in Los Angeles, from executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., and based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, The Sympathizer, is streaming now exclusively on Max. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
This episode is brought to you by Hyundai. You could be doing anything this week, right? You've got work, errands, friends, and a whole lot of fun in between. That's why the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the capable SUV that's built for your life. With premium interiors, available wireless charging, and room for your whole cargo and crew. Okay, Hyundai. Visit HyundaiUSA.com to learn more about the all-new 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe.
All right. It's the big deal of the day. I'm not sure how it happened. Matt James explained how The Bachelor failed him and his story. You know what? Rachel.
No, I did not put this topic in the rundown.
Rachel, how could I? This is your jam. What's going on with Matt James and The Bachelor, Rachel?
First of all, I need you to start using past tense when you refer to me in The Bachelor. It was my jam. I'm retired.
Fair enough.
So for those of you who don't know, Matt James wrote a book. It's called First Impressions and something else. I'm not sure the full title. I really wish this was a time where I wish we had him on the podcast, because I have more questions than I do answers in regards to this. But there are a lot of revelations that have come out, and he's done a couple of interviews, and he has been speaking about his time on The Bachelor. And he's disappointed. He doesn't like the way that he was portrayed. He doesn't like the way that people have talked about him. He feels that a lot of important and meaningful and relevant conversations were left out of, away from the viewers. He said he had these conversations, but the show chose not to show them. He thought that the show would basically promote him, almost as if they would show all the things that he's doing off camera that are successful and how ambitious he is. And instead, they showed him as what a lot of viewers said was boring and bland. He said that some viewers even call him an Uncle Tom. He says that he had a van. He said that he had a very meaningful. Van. He said that he had a very meaningful conversation for over an hour with Chris Harrison, and he poured his heart out to him about all the pressures that he was facing because he was the first Black Bachelor. And he talked about, he said that, Van, come back. Van. He said that he had an immense amount of pressure that he felt being the first Black Bachelor, and it was unfair to him. And he, you know, he spoke with Chris Harrison about it. That wasn't really shown at great length. He just talks about the true him didn't come out on the show, and he's disappointed on that. And he didn't realize he was the first Black Bachelor, but once he did, he thought this was a chance for diversity and for the show to expand in that way and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, this is him now telling his story.
First of all, hilarious. I don't know why that was funny. The way that you put that, he said people thought he was an Uncle Tom.
That's what he said.
Okay, I don't know why he put that. Okay. Secondly, a lot of people listening to this right now would expect me to pile on Matt James right here. No. I know what this feels like. I know what it feels like to be in a room, a production, a television production, with all white people, not understanding the landscape of what's going on in there, not understanding how you make your voice heard in there, and not understanding how you represent your authentic self there. The only difference between me and Matt James is, number one, I could never, ever, ever be considered some of the things that they say him. But there's another difference. I was on this show for 9 years and was able to perfect finding my voice and was able to perfect the art of direct and engaging resistance. You resist them, you call them out, but you make it TV. You do it in a way that's so compelling. Telling someone fuck you is one thing. Telling somebody fuck you with flair is a skill. Right? It's a skill. Matt was only on the show for a short amount of time. Pretty much, if you're on a show that short amount of time, you are what they say you are. Like, if you're on a show for as many years as I was on TMZ, at some point, your personality is going to break through. They just can't edit you that much. At some point, your but if you've got, what are you guys on there for? 3 months? Something like that?
Less than that, but sure.
They have an inordinate amount of power to edit you in a way that makes you look the way they want you to. And in this situation, they probably have so much riding on, you know, their cash cow of a show that they're not going to put anything in there that makes you feel, makes you look subversive or like you have questions or like you have concerns. Anything that doesn't play with the status quo, they'd be apt to take it out. So I actually feel Matt here. I feel what he's talking about. You know, I know people were expecting me to get the, you don't.
I didn't say that.
That
Yeah.
That was. So what's your, I mean, my opinion matters significantly less than yours.
No, it doesn't. And I think people will be interested in the fact that you didn't pile on, even though you came into this segment talking about it's time to do the weenie roast. term we hasn't been used in a while. Mm-hmm. I understand everything that you're saying. And I have been in those spaces in real life. And I've been in that space on this very franchise as the Bachelorette. Sure, mm-hmm. My issue with not just Matt James, but other Bachelor contestants and leads is that when they come off the show, they become revisionists. And they see things in a way that they didn't necessarily happen because they're either trying to promote themselves in a better light or they're getting the reviews and comments from other people. And so they're more so trying to have a narrative that fits or combats what people say about them. I believe, here's my thing. Matt James's season was different in particular because of the woman that he chose and her past actions and the allegations that were in her. So he had to deal with that as well, with Rachel, who he's still with, and they seem to be as happy as can be.
Wait. What?
Yeah.
Like they're together now?
Yes. So some of these things with Matt James, exactly. Some of these things with Matt James are, we're watching how you, what you did on the show, how you were in the finale. I'm taking conversations that I had with you off camera, and it doesn't add up with some of the things that you're now saying in this book. I get it. You got to sell books. I get it. You want to paint a certain narrative, and you want to combat some of the things that people say about you. But Van, you've been in these spaces before. Rachel, you've been in these spaces before. Would you have had that conversation with your dad on camera?
No.
Exactly.
Fuck no. But also, though, just to be real with you, I wouldn't have had that conversation with my dad on camera, but there would have been no opportunity to. Like,
exactly.
Yeah.
Like, but that's what I'm saying. There's a difference. And so I do believe, and I do know that Matt had conversations with some of the Black women about race. But to my knowledge, from what I know from the inside, you didn't have an in-depth conversation with Rachel, and I believe you publicly admitted that as well, which is why you ran into some of her ignorance and didn't know certain things about her, or she wasn't as educated about Black culture or didn't understand certain things because you didn't have those conversations. And it's fine if you've had them now, but don't try to go back and act like you did when you didn't. And I know you didn't have those conversations with her. And that's, again, I don't want to be redundant, but it's fine if y'all are having them now. It's fine if she's learned now. But you're trying to, I personally feel like some of it is a bit of a stretch because you're trying to combat some of the negative feelings people have about you. You also said people, the show didn't show his personality. You know, we did see it come out. You were TikTok dancing in the middle of a date. You were showing somebody your dinosaur backpack on a date. You know what I'm saying? Like, we saw it.
The dancing has always been a concern.
we did see his personality. But I will say this. Matt James came into the show, had never been on it before. So I think his expectations about how this show worked were different. The show is not about promoting you and showing how ambitious or successful you are. The show is about showing your relationship with these women and their relationship with each other. That's just the show. That's just the way the show works. So I get you being disappointed if that's what you thought it was going to be, but that's just not how the show is. So, you know, so the thing is he's happy now with who he wants to be with. That's the good news.
Some even labeled him an Uncle Tom. That's funny, man. That's funny.
But like, I just,
that's funny to me.
But you know what,
man? That's funny, man.
Did we cover his season or did we not? We didn't cover his season. But like, we talked about it.
We did. No, of course we did. Because we talked about it. Because the whole Weenie thing is Matt James, right?
Right. We did.
So we had to talk about.
We wouldn't have had. We talked about that conversation. We have. We wouldn't have talked about that. We talked about that conversation you had with Chris Harrison and about how problematic that was. I wouldn't.
But now I have questions, though. Now I have questions about whether or not that conversation was actually longer.
And of course, it was longer. It's a two-hour show.
So what I'm saying is,
read the article. He poured out his heart for an hour, over an hour, about the pressure he feels to pick a black woman for an hour with Chris Harrison. And this is,
did we know about Soup Kitchen at this point? I don't think we knew about Soup Kitchen.
But that, it didn't matter. Just like, he can't understand. Why are you talking to him for an hour about the pressures you felt as a black man to pick a black woman? It's just,
who else is there to talk to, though, is what I'm saying.
I didn't talk to Chris Harrison about pressure I felt to feel. Matter of fact, I was actually broke down about, on the show, about the pressures that they were putting on me, not to choose a black man, but how they did a bad job of casting with men on the show. And when they brought in Chris Harrison to talk to me, I went like this. What's he going to do? And he got mad. I was like, what is he going to talk to me about?
Did you and Brian have this conversation about race that you say
it.
That race? Okay, see, I didn't see it.
Well, no, they showed. Well, 2020 didn't happen, but I did talk about it. I did it with Nick when I was on The Bachelor. I always said, have you dated a black woman? Have you brought a black woman home? What is, my mom asked those questions. Pretty Hair was on the show. She asked those questions. I think my sister asked those questions. When I was on the show, I asked all the guys, have you dated a black woman? Have you brought a black woman home? How will your family respond to me? I asked those same questions. On my show, they made me talk to one of the guy and all his, I talked about this. He had black friends with white wives. And I got pissed off when they made me have that conversation. So I think it's easy to look at the show from a different lens when you're out of it versus in it. But I got to recognize the fact that there is some, he's being a bit of a revisionist.
You think he's capping?
I think that he's exaggerating some of it. I think that he did have conversations. I know he had conversations with some of the black women about it, but not the woman that he was going to pick. He didn't ask the right questions.
Okay. Before we move off of this, because I think this is interesting that I'm defending Matt James and you're roasting him.
I'm not roasting him.
The Rachel, what was her name again? Rachel Yucatel? What was her name? What was her name, for real?
No, it was
What's
Rachel.
Her last name?
It was Rachel Kirkconnell.
Kirkconnell? Who is Rachel? Oh, Rachel, you can tell it's
Tiger Woods. That's why I'm laughing. That's why I'm laughing when you said it. I was like, are you
Rachel
being funny?
Kirkconnell. Rachel Kirkconnell. Like Rachel Kirkconnell. Rachel Kirkconnell. It's got a Yucatel-ish kind of thing to it. So, Kirkconnell. Mm-hmm. Do we think that Kirkconnell, okay. Kirkconnell went to what was like a slave auction or something like that, right? She went to a, what did she go to again?
No.
God damn, I cannot remember this.
She went to an antebellum party where they celebrate the Old South.
They dress up like slavers and shit. if you were Matt James and there was a guy on there, Brian, listen, Brian, you really like Brian, right? Mm-hmm. Had Brian gone to a party like that, do you feel like you could have still picked him?
It would have had to go down in a different way. If he went to the party, if he was ignorant, I would have asked, like, I wouldn't have been able to say, hey, did you go to an Antebellum party, right? Like, we can't expect Matt James to ask that question. But once I found out, taking you back, Rachel never came out and publicly said anything until after the whole Chris Harrison thing. So for like 2 months, it had been out there. I'd be damned if the man that I chose stayed silent. Like, you would have had to come out and say something. I would have been like, we had these conversations. I dropped the ball. I didn't ask the right thing. So it would depend what the response is. I'm not going to say I would have left him, but he would have had to respond in a different way for me.
Hmm. All right. Look, this is a topic that we actually broach with our next guest, Garcelle Beauvais. We're going to talk a little bit about international in this, as well as her fantastic book, as well as what was it like being a Black actress in the 90s. And of course, some really good stuff about her current tenure on The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Mm-hmm. Our interview with Garcelle Beauvais is up next. Guys, big moment in my life right now. Big moment in the podcast life, but big moment in my life right now. You get a chance to interview somebody who I've admired for a very long time. Garcelle Beauvais joins us on Higher Learning today, and this is a big deal. This is a big deal. Garcelle, why do you think this is such a big deal for me, if you had to guess?
I don't know. Maybe a crush when I was on the Jamie Foxx show.
Ding, 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 ding.
Fancy.
Hi.
It was one of those moments where you would look at the TV and we like, I didn't know they made them like that. Damn. Okay.
I got to tell you, this is my first time seeing him fan out like this, by the way.
Oh my God, I am flattered because I know you guys talk to everybody, so I'm really flattered.
So you have had an amazing career, actress, television personality, author. You have a book right there. Is your book behind you right there? Why don't you tell us the name of the book and a little bit about what made you want to write a book?
The book title is Love Me As I Am, and it felt like it was the right time to do it. You know, I feel good personally, professionally, and I thought if this is the moment to sort of tell my story and tell it, you know, from my point of view, from my experience, and hopefully people will get along and go on this journey with me. I'm not done, but I up until now, I felt like it was a moment in time.
Mm. A lot of revelations in the book, which I have right up here, by the way. One of the things that you reveal is you talk about people from your past, one of them being that you passed up on, or maybe you did. Did you say no to Michael Jordan? Was that what that was?
I didn't know any better. I was modeling in New York. I went for a fitting at Essence Magazine, and they said, tomorrow you're working with Michael Jordan. And by the way they said it, I knew I was supposed to know this person, but I did not know. So I was like, wow, great. Cause you know, I didn't know, but I could tell I was supposed to. So I got home later that day and I called my mom and I was talking to my mom and I said, oh, tomorrow I'm shooting with Essence. And I'm working with Michael Jordan, and my brother in the background heard my mom say Michael Jordan. And he was like, what? Listen, there was no Google. I wasn't watching basketball. I was dancing and being, you know, girly. And so the next day he showed up and he was, you know, just a professional and sweet and kind to every single person. And we spent the day shooting together. And by the end, he had asked me, out, and we went out. He showed me how to hit some golf balls. I don't even know how that happened. And he invited me to Hawaii, and I was like, no.
Garcelle, I mean, wait, for context, what year was this? Had he won championships at this point?
I don't even know.
Garcelle.
Garcelle.
I'm going to be honest with you, Garcelle. The year is pretty important to this story for, for a couple 80s, of reasons.
90s?
Like, is this the 80s or the 90s, Garcelle?
Don't come for me.
I was wondering.
Wait, like, he was so sweet. He was really sweet and a gentleman. And, you know, I messed up. I fumbled.
Totally fine. Can I ask a follow-up question really quickly, man? Recently on, I don't know if you watch the other Housewife franchises, but on Atlanta, it was a big topic of conversation because someone said, hey, let's go around the table and talk about the most famous person who's hit on you. And all the ladies went around and said that. Is Michael Jordan for you the most famous one who's hit on you?
No.
Oh, who is that, it? Okay. Yeah. We got to know.
Yeah. Who is it?
We have to know.
I mean.
Because I'm going to tell you why we have to know. For the sheer fact that somebody who's more famous than Michael Jordan?
Well, I could name some people.
I could name some people too. I mean, like, you know, the Eddie Murphys, there's other people. Would you say Eddie Murphy is less famous than Michael Jordan?
Absolutely.
No, they both have crossover appeal.
You're all into the ball.
But Eddie Murphy, that's who it is. Eddie Murphy. Okay.
Well, I mean, over the years, there's been, you know, lots of people. When you're a young actress in the industry, people are, you know.
What? Let me ask you something. Was that exhausting? I mean, I'm serious. Like, you're a very beautiful woman. Here you are making your way in the industry. You're modeling. You're acting. The times were, let's face it, very different than they are now. Was it ever exhausting, the amount of men that would hit on you?
I don't think. I mean, I never looked at it as exhausting. And it was over a period of time. It wasn't like all in a week, all in a month. But it was flattering. And I didn't really understand. Do you know what? I don't know why. I just didn't buy into my looks. Obviously, it helped me with my career, but I never really bought into it. Does that make sense?
Yes. I actually think that's great. You didn't get caught up in it all.
No,
I sound like you. I would have gotten caught up.
I'll be honest with you. Nah, it kind of doesn't. I'll be honest with you. Like, so Garcelle, you would look in the mirror and not know I am a beautiful woman?
Not that I didn't know. I didn't rely solely on that. You know what I mean? Like, even for me as a young girl, like, you know, growing up and making friends with other girls, I always wanted everybody to see me and not this. So therefore, I went above and beyond to be friends with people. So that it wasn't about that. So it was almost like I was working against it, if you will.
Building on that, you know, in your book, or just one of the themes or what you want people to take from it, you know, coming from Haiti, having the success that you've had, it's so inspiring. And so can you talk a little bit about that portion of the book that you wanted to write about and what you hope young girls who look like you, or maybe even who don't, because anybody can be inspired by your story.
Thank you for that. And that's one of the things, my takeaways with the book, is that a lot of different people have connected and felt inspired by it. For me, you know, leaving Haiti at the age of 7, I didn't speak a word of English. I watched Sesame Street. I was the only Black kid in my school when I could go to school. I think I have the immigrant mentality, which is why I think I hustle so much. It's always like, I'm so grateful that I'm here. I'm so grateful that I have these opportunities. So I constantly want to, I guess, maybe reaffirm why I'm here. Do you know what I mean? And so my mom bringing us here was just an amazing opportunity. And she knew that, but we didn't know that. I mean, we were like, why are we here? It's cold. There's snow on the ground. We don't speak the language. We've never seen these white people. Like, it was definitely a shock, but obviously the best thing that happened. And I think for me, when I could go to school with Black kids like myself, when I went to Miami, I was so excited. But because I learned English the proper way, and you know, being the new kid in school, all eyes are on you. And they were like, well, she thinks she's white. She speaks too proper. Like, and that was really hurtful, because here I was so excited to get with my people. So it was a lot of things. But for me, I think the thread through my entire life is just perseverance. I just never give up.
Did you feel different culturally than the black kids in the school that you went that you went to school with? You felt different culturally. How did you feel different?
With the things they could get away with that I couldn't get away with. You know, we had to wear dresses, we had to look nice, and you know, they could wear jeans, they could wear whatever. And I remember my mom seeing a couple of girls that were pregnant in high school, and she was not having it. So she took me out of that school so fast. I think culturally is the respect, the way you carry yourself. So I wasn't allowed to say what. If my mom called me and I didn't say yes, you know, in reply, that wasn't good. So it was definitely a different upbringing. I remember I went to a friend of mine's house and she was mixed, and we were having dinner with her family, and she had a hickey, and her father goes, "What is that on your neck?" And she goes, "Don't you worry about it." And I was like waiting for a plate to go fly, and I was waiting for something. There's no way I would have been able to talk like that. No way.
I gotta be honest with you. That must be some wild Miami stuff, because where I'm from in Louisiana, none of that would be able to fly either. Like, none of it. I still don't answer my mama what. It's okay. Yes, ma'am. Damn, no, it's yes, ma'am. My right. father's yep. passed on, but yes, sir, all of that. So that, you know, we're maybe we Haitian or something like that. I don't know.
We'll take you. We'll claim you.
Garcelle, speaking of different, you are the only and the first housewife, black housewife on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, which I have to tell you. You ask all the questions and say all the things that us viewers, like what we want to know, what we want to say. You're like the people's housewife. I don't know if people tell you that, but that's how I feel when I watch you. I'm like, thank you, Garcelle.
That phrase, the people's housewife. I like that.
You are. You're the. Yeah. How this is a rough season. There seems to be a lot going on. Where do you stand with alliances with your castmates, because there's just a lot of off-camera things. We're just getting into the season, haven't even touched what some of the drama is that is alleged for this season.
Yeah, you know, this season is going to be definitely a doozy, and I hate the fact that it's gone offline, you know, because I think we're, like you said, we're just getting started. Let it play out, and then we'll take care of it when the reunion comes or later on in the season. So for me, my alliance is with Sutton. I'm friends with Kyle. And, you know, I'm friends with Kathy. I mean, I don't want to get into that just yet, because I think a lot has to be developed before we get into any of that stuff that's happening on social media. But I wish it wasn't on social media. I wish people would just watch the show and let us get to it.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You were such a revelation when you were on the Jamie Foxx show, and I feel like there were a lot of black actresses from the time that you were popular and on television that really didn't get the opportunity in Hollywood as much as some of our sisters are now. Like, I talked to my friend Tay Diggs about this, and he'll always talk about the fact that he was just a little bit early in terms of studios and everybody being so open to shows and movies and art featuring all different types of black faces, right? Yeah. Are there any regrets of that nature that you have about your career in Hollywood? It's so much longer and you're still here. Do you feel like Hollywood was as open a place for black performers in the time that you were doing your thing on TV?
Definitely not. Definitely not. I mean, I think we've come a long way, but I remember, first of all, coming from the modeling world into acting, a lot of casting directors talk and she walk and talk at the same time. They had no faith in models. And so it was important for me to do diverse roles. From the Jamie Foxx show, I went straight into NYPD Blue. I think that helped me, you know, and I was careful about what the choices I made, you know, not because I had it like that, but because I thought, I don't want to do that. And for a lot of times it would be like, oh, she's not urban enough. She's not street enough. And I think that probably stopped me from doing certain roles that may have pigeonholed me. I don't know. I think everything happens for a reason. There were roles that I wanted that they would, like, we're not going urban. We're not doing an interracial, you know, relationship. We're not seeing Black people, even for Models, Inc. You know, when I got, when my agent at the time had said, oh, there's a show coming up that I think you'd be great for, and, you know, we'll get you an audition. And I was still modeling. That was my, you know, bread and butter. So I would fly back and forth to New York or everywhere. And a couple of weeks went by and I said, hey, whatever happened to that show? And they said, oh, they're not seeing any Black actresses. And I was like, it's a show about models in New York. They're not seeing any Black actresses. So that night, I went.
They just straight up told you that?
Oh, yeah. My agent told me that. They're not seeing any Black. Yeah.
Your agent just says straight up.
Yep.
They're not seeing any Black people.
Yep. Because we would hear that before. We would hear they're going another way. They don't really want it to be urban, an urban story. And so that night I went to bed and I had a dream that I was talking to Aaron Spelling. Now, being Haitian, we're superstitious. We believe in a lot of things. So the next day I thought to myself, I didn't have that dream, you know, by coincidence. It's for a reason. So 411, I called 411 and I said, I need the address of Spelling Entertainment. And they said 5757 Wilshire. I'll never forget it. So I wrote a letter. I put a couple of modeling photos and I had like a small reel. And I took it to the office and it was a Black receptionist. So when I got up to the floor, I said, hi, I'd like to see Mr. Spelling. And she was like, do you have an appointment? And I said, no. She goes, it doesn't work like that, right? And I said, well, can I leave you a package? She said, yes. And so the next day I called and I said, listen, you know, I'm the girl that was there yesterday. Did you get the did he get the package? She said, I actually left it on his desk, which was really, really cool of her. Wow. And 4 days later, I got a call from the casting director. 3 days later, I read for Aaron Spelling and I got the job.
Mm. Wow.
Kick that door down. Kick that door down, Garcelle.
People don't do it like that anymore. I got to tell you, from that to...
Not so much security. I wouldn't have gotten near the building.
From that to getting your own development deal. Where do you want to do with that? Where do you see that going? Like, what kind of projects are you into? What kind of doors do you want to help open for other people?
Listen, to have this opportunity to still be, I don't like the word relevant, but to still be working in this industry and mm-hmm. being able to get a development deal is huge for me. I want to create content for all of us. And I want to tell different stories from unscripted to scripted. It's an opportunity for me to sort of take control of the narrative. And for so long, I feel like we tell the same stories, but now I feel like we're opening up the doors and people are open to seeing and watching our stories. So I hope I get to do a mm-hmm. lot of different things. And producing is where I want to go. I'm not interested in directing, but producing I love.
That's great.
You're on the Jamie Foxx show for many years.
Yeah.
Jamie was on vacation not too long ago, Garcelle. He was hanging out with, spotted with a lady.
I saw it.
Garcelle.
What?
There are some people that are noticing a trend with Jamie. Some people that say, fancy is the last time we saw Jamie with a Black woman.
Stop it right now.
You're just telling her what the people are saying.
I'm just telling her what the people are saying. I never said that. I don't care. I support the brother. I think he's the most talented. What do you think? Did you have any thoughts about that? You know, what do you think?
We in the 21st century. Mm-hmm. We are allowed to date anybody we want to. I mean, listen, mm-hmm. I was married to a white man, so I can't say too much.
Me neither. Garcelle, me neither. I stay quiet during these moments.
But I have dated brothers since, though.
Mm-hmm. Or do you ever see yourself, would you, now that you've gone Black, is there any chance you'll go back?
You know what? I'm open to whomever presents themselves and it's a right fit for me. I'm not pigeonholing one way or another. If that's my person, it's my person, no matter what color, what race, what anything.
Do you think that more people, Black women particularly, should be open to dating outside of their race, white guys, Asian guys, whatever?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there should be a stigma. I mean, love is love, right? You can't help. I mean, listen, you can go to a restaurant and you can pick the steak you want, how you want it done. But I think when it comes to something like love, heart, you have to be open. Mm. You don't know who's supposed to be with you. I mean, do I love seeing a Black couple? Absolutely. But I also think love is love. You fall who, you know, with who you fall in love with. Yeah. Who do you date, man?
Black. You know, it's not, but look, here's the thing though. But here's the thing though. I want you guys to understand something.
Okay.
There's no, here's the difference. They're free. There's no choice. I mean, like, there's like, I can't, like, my mama's,
wait, what?
My mama's not going to accept that. like, it's not, you know, and by the way, this is, look, in all seriousness.
I have Rachel something to say about that too. Go ahead.
Like, in all seriousness, Rachel knows. I'm one of the guys who I don't really give a fuck. I think
no, he doesn't.
I don't give a fuck. But the reality is that because it's so funny, right? We're here for such a short time, and then like we're gone. So to really to be when you think about life in those terms, to be hung up on certain things, it's really really wild. But I do think though that not so much with sisters and white guys, but with Black men and Black women. That there is a legitimate sort of concern that Black women can bring to the table. There's a legitimate concern that we at least have to hear them out in terms of their ability to find mates, how important they feel in American society, how their beauty is approached in American society. Sisters should be free to do whatever they want, but as Black men, we should really be a little bit more cognizant and willing to hear out sisters who have a problem with Black men dating outside of the race. That doesn't mean that you can't do it, but I feel like it's you have to honor Black women by listening to some of their hurt, their pain, and their opinions on that. Am I wrong?
No.
No, you're definitely not wrong. But I also think there are certain Black men who, when they get to a certain level, it almost feels like they have to go the other way to level up. And that I have a problem with.
Right.
I have a problem with that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they all sometimes they sometimes, you know, they whoever you want, but don't be like, yo, this is why I love white women.
Which we're seeing way too much of these days. Way too much.
I want to hear that. But I have to say the other day one of my boys was like, oh, I like this girl. And I knew my other son likes another girl, and I actually yelled out loud in the house. I'm like, anybody gonna date a Black girl? It's like I had.
Wait, an what did they say? What did they say?
Well, one of them was like, "Well, Mom, at our school, there's not, you know that, you know, there's not."
Yeah, yeah, the whole Bronny James thing. So look. Garcelle, this has been an amazing conversation with you. I don't know why I'm saying this. I'm happy that we still get to talk, hear from, and watch the development and growth of Garcelle Beauvais. And wherever you go, you bring a light and you keep it real, man. I didn't know you was this militant. When I seen you on the show giving the business to people, I'm like, yeah. Like, that's what the fuck I'm talking about. I didn't know Fancy was bringing it like that.
She was on the reel. That's all they do.
Right? I know. I miss it already.
I know. We miss it too.
And I'm gonna give you, before I let you go, I'm going to give you a 5-second pitch. Mm-hmm. You're talking about producing. I have a dream project. I've made a movie. The movie did pretty good. We have got to get the Haitian Revolution movie done.
You're the second person
I've
done that.
It has. Oh my God, it's got to happen. Like I'm kicking all the tires. They don't want that movie to be made. I know. But like they don't want that movie to be made. That's the film.
That's amazing.
That's
okay, let's keep talking.
Mm-hmm. Let's keep talking. Okay. This is Higher Learning, the podcast. That was the amazing Garcelle Beauvais. We appreciate you so much for joining us today on Higher Learning.
Keep doing your thing, you guys. Love you so much, really.
All right. Jake Paul. Garcelle was great, wasn't she?
She was fantastic.
Super attractive.
It's fun to see you fan out like that. I didn't know that. You didn't. I mean, we knew she was coming on, but I didn't know how you felt about her. I like it.
Yes, got you all. Okay, Jake Paul slammed Paul. President Biden. Hates him. Jake Paul says he's a YouTuber turned boxer. That's who Jake Paul is. Took to Twitter. He aired his grievances out against President Biden. These are the grievances. 1, highest gas prices. 2, worse inflation. 3, plummeting crypto prices. Okay, these three things are not President Biden's fault. I can tell you that right now. 4, highest rent prices ever. 5, created new incomprehensible language. Some would say that probably happened under President Trump. If you're reading this and you voted for Biden and you still don't regret it, then you are the American problem. Jake Paul is making his presence felt in the political sphere. Now, what we could do was go down this list and talk about how these things are complex global problems. As we sit right now, the gas is $9 in Canada. The crypto situation is the combination of a lot of things. There are a lot of things right now that are influencing this. You know why I won't do that, though? First of all, I won't do that because I think smart people already know that. Okay? I think smart people already look at these three things and look at some of the issues that are plaguing the world when you talk about supply side things.
Absolutely.
Okay. And another reason why I won't do that is because it's the White House's job to message that.
Yeah, it is. But it's the White House's job. Paying attention to
Jake. Now, I'm not talking about Jake Paul. I'm talking about overall. Number one, inflation is something that the president needs to take action on. This has not happened before in the 1970s. The inflation was fucking terrible. They appointed a new Fed chief named Paul Volcker, and that guy fucking drove the interest rates up so goddamn high that he was able to defeat inflation, but it was at a fantastic cost to the American economy over the next really decade, if you really want to be honest with you about honest about it. The situation there is that was at a time where the Fed did not have very much credibility with the American public. This is a time when the Fed actually does have a lot of credibility with the American public. So the question is, how is Biden and the rest of really not just the Democrats, but really the American governmental apparatus going to convince the American public that inflation is something that they're going to be able to fix? Because there are ways that they have to, there are things that they probably could do to fix inflation or at least lessen the blow. Because right now, only the poor people are being hurt. Like, people that are in a good position financially are probably not feeling this blow as much. But people that need every dollar, they're really just, it's almost like it's crippling for them to have these costs rise like this. But it's the White House job to message this. I guess my question is, whether or not this information is right or wrong, and the crypto thing is a fucking joke, you guys play with fake money and now you're getting real burnt. Do you have a problem with Jake Paul tweeting this?
I do. And it's not that Jake Paul can't have an opinion, right? I'm not one of those people who's like, oh, stick to doing what you're doing. No, obviously he can have an opinion. He has a vote in this country. He can say what he feels. My issue is, you said something where smart people will understand why the first three things are happening. Do you think that the audience that Jake Paul reaches who can vote understand why the first three things are happening? Do you think majority of them do? Do you think majority of them said, huh, Jake Paul made this statement. Let me go out and research and understand what inflation is, how it came about, and did this just happen in the last year, 2 years, or is this something that's been building? Do you think people really did that? Do you think people looked up the whole supply and demand thing? I don't think they did. So this is why I have a problem with what he said. You put this general statement out there, this blanket statement, without the why. And it's great. So it's like, what's the purpose of you putting out this statement? Is it to condemn the Biden administration? Is it because you're frustrated? Because Jake Paul's somebody who's not hurt by the things that he, maybe it's the crypto, but not necessarily hurt by the things that he named, right? He's in a different bracket. So what's your purpose for putting that out there? Are you trying to encourage people to gather information, to vote, to understand? I just felt like there should have been a why that list exists, how these things are happening. Otherwise, don't put that out there.
I think because the why was clear.
What's the why?
He said, the last line of it is, if you're reading this and you voted for Biden and you don't regret it, then you are the American problem. I think the why is that he feels like President Biden has been bad.
Not the why he did it. The why there's inflation. The why the crypto. That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking the why in his list, not the why he did it. So to me, it's fine if you want to do that, but then give a little bit more, because this is a huge generalization and it makes it doesn't characterize properly the what is happening, right? You're blaming it on Biden, but that's not necessarily all true, right? And it has nothing to necessarily do with your vote for Biden. There are a lot of issues that play into why inflation is so high right now, and it didn't start in the Biden presidency. You can say some things that he's done have contributed to inflation, but you can't say it's the reason why it exists currently in this country. So I just felt it's just really problematic. And I think a lot of people do that, where they just throw these things out there and they have a huge audience and people receive it. And then you'll have these people saying, yeah, you know, like, forget the Biden administration, that they're the reason we have inflation, which isn't necessarily true. It's just, it's misinformation to me.
Okay. So I see your point. If you're talking about the fact that it's misinformation, the question is it misinformation or is it disinformation? And
I think it's miss, but
okay. Well, so if it's misinformation, then it's Twitter par for the course. And if you're asking Jake Paul to have a higher degree of responsibility than we see for places like Fox News and other places like that, it's just not going to happen. If Jake Paul, well, the reason why I say whether or not it's misinformation or disinformation is because, do you think Jake Paul knows that what he's saying isn't true? Because if Jake Paul knows that what he's saying isn't true. Oh, look how my nails catch the light. Sexy daddy got a gel manicure. Sexy daddy got a gel manicure. He's a sexy daddy with the gel manicure. He's a sexy daddy with the gel manicure. Yeah. Sexy daddy with the gel manicure. Okay, that's enough.
Van.
This is 70s. Every octave is a 70s disco joint. I just dropped y'all with another hit, a 70s disco joint about my gel manicure. If Jake Paul knows that what he's saying isn't true, then it's disinformation. And Jake Paul is purposely putting out destabilizing information to use with his X amount of million-dollar fans, millions of fans, whatever, to make them go vote in a different way. If it's misinformation, he's doing the same thing I see. But I'm not saying that what he's doing is right. What I'm saying is there are so many misinformed political takes that I'm seeing right now. So many people who don't know what the fuck they're talking about. Now, we're going to talk in a second about all the celebrities endorsing Rick Caruso for mayor. Rick Caruso is a Trump loyalist who's been a lifelong Republican operative in one of the biggest ways here. And I'm like, he is.
No, I just like that you use the word operative. But
like that, there was this one time, there was this really handsome guy that was sitting behind President Trump at a debate or something like that. He was going to the debates. He's like some kind of, that was Rick Caruso's son. These guys are like, oh, and I'm seeing this influx of supposedly liberal Los Angeles celebrities supporting Rick Caruso, and I still am not really getting a lot of answers why. If you guys don't know who Rick Caruso is, he is a uber rich real estate guy out here in California who created The Grove, and he's very rich. I've met him before. Decent, nice guy, I guess. I mean, politically, he's putrid and has been involved in a lot of things, but like, I don't feel like a lot of the people that we would call quote unquote celebrities have any clue what the fuck they're talking about when it comes to the majority of this stuff. And I think that jumps over party lines. I think that's kind of on a both sides type of thing. So when I saw this, I thought, oh, well, Jake doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. As far as the irresponsibility, it moved me less, because I see this so often. I see people posting shit that's obviously fucking fake. That's obviously fake. Like, it's really fake. but it's out there. So I don't know, man. I don't know.
I mean,
do your homework, Jake.
If you're gonna step into that world, I just feel like you gotta step up a little bit.
You're not wrong. Do you have any crypto?
No, don't have a wallet. Don't have any of that.
Trudy Donnie, crypto heads?
I don't understand it.
Me neither. Yeah, Trudy?
It's not for me. I don't get it. And somebody tried to explain NFTs to me, and it still doesn't make sense.
I understand NFTs. Yeah, that's whatever. You know, Rachel looked at me crazy. The last time I tried to explain crypto to Rachel, she didn't even listen.
I was just like this.
Yeah. Justice Department is opening a probe into the Louisiana State Police. More happenings down there in my state. Sweeping civil rights investigation to Louisiana State Police amid mounting evidence that the agency has a pattern of looking the other way in the face of beatings of mostly black men, including the 2019 arrest of Ronald Green, which was deadly. The federal pattern of or practice probe, which is the first such action against a statewide law enforcement agency in more than two decades, comes more than 3 years after troopers were captured on long-withheld body camera video, beating, stunning, and dragging Green on a rural roadside near Monroe. Monroe is a town in North Louisiana. Despite lengthy ongoing federal and state criminal investigations into a death, troopers initially blamed on a car crash, no one has been charged. Okay. So when I saw this story, do you know what I thought? No fucking shit. I thought that this is the example of what happens when you have a community's voice drowned out. There is not one black person that I personally know in South Louisiana, where I grew up, Baton Rouge, I'll tell you guys again, it's where I'm from, who doesn't know what the fuck is up with the state police. Not one. Not one. There, when you are driving to New Orleans, I think it's Troop A, in the state police. When you are driving toward New Orleans, most of the time you're driving toward New Orleans, right? This is what the player proof crew would do. Everybody want to go to the Bayou Classic, right? When they want to leave, Rich, they want to leave on Friday. Oh, I'm going to get off work. We're going to drive down. Because when you drive down on Friday, it's like a line of cars. You get stuck in traffic. You might see some on the way. You feel what I'm saying? You might see a little something on the way. But the player proof crew, we leave on Thursday night because we like to fly. We get Ryan Davenport behind the wheel. Ian's going to fall asleep. What we would always do is we would wait till Ian would fall asleep. Ryan had 312s in the back of his car. And so when Ian would fall asleep, we would boom, hit them 12s and wake his dumb ass up every single time. Put that beat on his motherfucking back. And we would fly down there. Ryan would be flying. He was the best driver in the crew going. But you know where we wouldn't fly? There's an area right when you're leaving Baton Rouge that we would slow down. The reason why we would slow down is because we know that the state police troop that patrols that area, we do not want to run into them. We don't want to see them. We don't want to deal with them. We don't want them to see us. We don't want them to happen upon four black dudes going down to New Orleans to have a good time. This is in the 90s. We know the stories we've heard of how they do niggas. We know the stories we've heard of how they've planted stuff. We know the stories we heard of how they will keep you sitting on the side of the road for 6 or 7 hours just to fuck with you, take your car for no. We've heard all of this, how they fuck with you. Now, if we're talking about this going on 20 or 30 years, how is it that whoever is supposed to have oversight in this situation is so behind the calls and the complaints and the thoughts and feelings of an entire community in South Louisiana? That's what I ask you.
I mean, it's obviously I'm not familiar with what goes down in Louisiana, but I know that you've talked about it a little bit. So, I mean, maybe even more than a little bit, but the fact that this is the case that had to happen where they wanted to, which is what, like, it's so disgusting and tragic what happened to Rodney Green. If this is the case that had to require the Justice Department to go down there and open it up to where
Ronald
they're trying
Green.
to
Ronald Green, by the way.
Is it Ronald Green? I thought it was Rodney. Sorry, that's my uncle.
It's Rodney King.
I got, No, I have a Rodney Green as an uncle.
Oh, wow.
Anyways, yeah, Ronald Green, that this had to happen for them to finally open things up what seems to have been going on since the existence of this state police. It's pretty incredible. But it seems like the Justice Department really is, and maybe I'm overspeaking, maybe I'm generalizing, doing some probes into problematic police forces.
You're into it.
Well, I'm into it if it's going to create some type of change, if it's going to bring somebody like me who lived right next door to Louisiana but had no idea what was happening with the Louisiana State Police. Yeah, if it's going to bring awareness, if it's going to put people on their toes, if it's going to clean out these departments that have been problematic from the very beginning, then I'm absolutely into it. And I'm hoping that's what happens here. It's just crazy to me that you guys have always known that this is what's been going down and it's just been ignored. Hmm.
Just to let you guys know, in some cases, troopers omitted uses of force as blows to the head from official reports. They didn't talk about them. And in other troopers sought to justify their actions by claiming suspects were violent, resisting, or escaping, all of which were contradicted by video footage. If the investigation is thorough, and if the investigation is impartial, they have these guys dead to rights. This is an open secret for a lot of people. All right, 31 Patriot Front members are arrested near Idaho Pride event. I'm sure you guys have heard about this by now. Authorities arrested 31 members of the white supremacist group Patriot Front near an Idaho Pride event Saturday after they were found packed into the back of a U-Haul truck with riot gear. Rachel, did you hear about this story?
Yes, I heard about this.
What do you think? I mean, the fucking guys got hit with conspiracy to riot, which is a misdemeanor. They were fucking ready to go nuts. They were standing inside the truck wearing khakis, navy blue shirts, and beige hats with white baklavas covering their faces. All right, police stopped them. They had all kinds of stuff. Based on evidence collected and documents, authority found that the group was planning to riot in several areas of downtown, not just the park, White said. Police found riot gear, one smoke grenade, shin guards, and shields inside the van. They wore arm patches and logos on their hats that identified them as the Patriot Front. Now, let me tell you something about this real quick. And I'm not comparing these two things whatsoever because there's bodies on the one side, allegedly. If these guys get out there and they get to the fucking streets while Pride is going on, there's no fucking clue how many people get hurt. I understand that the conspiracy to riot charge is a criminal charge. You mean to tell me, Legal Eagle, in all of the fucking penal code, whatever you fuck you call it, whatever it is, there's nothing more severe these guys can be charged with? This seems like an incredibly dangerous situation. Is this a criminal conspiracy? They're going to get YSL, that's fine. Should they be going to get the Patriot Front?
Okay. Well, I don't think we can compare it to YSL because YSL actually allegedly committed the acts, the criminal acts. They stopped them before it happened. That's why it's a conspiracy. I don't know
Rico!
The penal code in Idaho. I don't know the penal code in Idaho, but it's also, this is alarming, obviously, for obvious reasons. But what's also alarming is that this is a part of a new white supremacist group. New. You already got the ones that are already out there. People are still creating white supremacist groups, brand new ones. That is terrifying to me. And the guy who started this one from Dallas,
yeah,
right outside of Dallas.
Makes a lot of sense.
And you, okay. I think there are a lot of messed up things happening in both of our states. But that to me, that's just equally as terrifying. Is that people are out here starting new groups of hate.
You know, I think this week was the anniversary of the shooting at the Pulse nightclub. And I think about that when I think about these groups. And if, to be honest with you, if there is not something on the books, there should be. Because to stop, how do we know that they were going down there just to riot? If you look at, if the way I look at it, they were going down there to hurt people.
Oh, absolutely.
It was a riot in Charlottesville that cost that woman, Heather Hare, her life. Right? So, like, it's not like these things happen and no one gets hurt. People get hurt people go down there and get hurt. And by the way, this isn't something that where people are marching for something and things get out of hand. These are agitators who have a purposeful and very direct objective to go down there and start shit. What were they going to do it peacefully? They're going to do it and make sure nobody got hurt?
No, that's why their faces were covered. I don't know how to
respond to that. Well, I sure do, Siri.
Their faces were covered. And it's like, maybe they didn't have the guns, and you're thinking, oh, they couldn't physically hurt them. But you just think about that, how they would have harassed them. They would have emotionally, mentally attacked them, where they basically are intimidating to the point where they're too scared to come out and live their lives as who they are. That was what they were doing, which you're right.
That smoke grenades.
That smoke grenades.
That smoke grenade. If it's a bunch of niggas, it's a felony. I don't care what
you do. I wish there was, I don't know, like I said, I don't know the penal code, and there should be something more harsh than that because of all the damage that they could have potentially done, not just even physically, but, and the motive was hate. Right? That's the thing. The motive was hate behind it, which I would think that would be something that would make it an even bigger crime. But again, I don't know the books there.
We have been promising you guys a conversation for a long time surrounding Lil Nas X and the Montero video. We finally got to have that conversation with the amazing Jarryd Hill. But we also talked to Jarryd, part two of our conversation surrounding the case of Issei Etoutte down there in Virginia, and Jarryd's going to give us some much-needed perspective. The always amazing Jarryd Hill when we come back from this break on the other side of Higher Learning. You guys, we have a very special guest coming on right now. I met this gentleman some years ago. I think it was at a panel that he hosted. I think that's when we met, right?
Yes.
Panel of some sort, Jarryd.
Black Men in Media, like 2018 or 2019, maybe.
Yeah, Black Men in Media. That's what we are. Me and Jarryd Hill, we're some black men in media. Since then, he has become somebody who gives me a great deal of perspective. I talk to him all the time. We're brothers. I consider him to be a friend. He is the host, or one half of the host, of the Fanti podcast with Travell Anderson. And he does so many other things. He is an advocate. He is an activist. He is one of the smartest guys in this whole city. Jarryd Hill is
whenever y'all you don't think set so? Me up
receive
like that,
it.
It's way too much pressure because now I
receive it. Something. You'll be fine. You'll be fine. Receive okay, that.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Now, I reached out to Jarryd because we have been we've talked about a great many things. Jarryd and I have. I wanted to revisit the conversation later on. I'm surprising him with this one about Lil Nas X and the Montero video. Remember, we talked about that some time ago.
Wow.
We kept promising the audience we would do that, and we never did it. So
I'm an ambush. Okay.
It's an ambush. we wanted to continue the conversation we had around Issei Etoutte and his acquittal for murder charges out there in Virginia. We had our thoughts, and we had a conversation with his defense on it. And I wanted to get the opinion of Jarryd, a member of the LGBTQ plus community, so we could I got it right
here, I was no Jarryd, do you call him out on that? I was shocked. I was like holding my breath as you were about to say it. Might be the first time.
Good job. Nice work, man. I'm happy.
So I called Jarryd and I asked Jarryd if he would look over things and kind of maybe call us on some of our biases and maybe give an opinion that we can kind of absorb, because to be honest with you, there was a lot of talk, very divisive interview on a lot of our socials. So Jarryd, thank you for joining us. And when you looked at it, what did you think of everything that happened out there in Virginia?
I said, whoo, shit, I do not want to have to talk about this. my first thought. First of all, and I'm not saying this because I'm on your show, but I do want to shout y'all out because I do think that y'all ask all of the right questions as allies, right? As folks that are like wanting, that are not a part of community, that want to defend community. Y'all talked about dead naming. Y'all asked the questions about whether or not Jerry or Angie identified as trans. Y'all asked a lot of questions throughout the time in the interview. And I was like, okay, I see y'all. I was like, and I wasn't surprised, but I was very happy. And so that was the first thing that I was thinking. This case is interesting to me as a queer person who is like on dating apps and single and, you know, kind of out here or whatever. But like it struck me because it's really about whether or not people are being honest about things, right? And like, I am looking at this from the lens of people lie about who they are on dating apps and for sex all day, every day, right? The lies can be, I am 37, I am single, I am straight, I am gay, right? I am interested in you, right? Or whatever, all kinds of different things that people lie about for sex. And so like that part of it was something that I was like, this is an interesting intersection where we're talking about gender and race and sexuality. And I feel like this case kind of encompasses all of those things together in a way that is really, really unique and special, because if either one of the dynamics of this case, race or gender or sexuality or how one presents or all of those different things, if any of them were different, we'd be talking about this differently.
Yeah, it really was a complex, I guess, issue for us to tackle. And as Van pointed out on our socials, people were divided as far as how they thought we approached it. You listened to the interview. What were your thoughts? And maybe what was problematic in the interview? Maybe you didn't find it that way. Yeah, if you could speak on that.
So I had like notes that I wrote down about both of the things that y'all brought up as points. Like, so for instance, Rachel, one of the bones of contention that I share with you was that EC never said in that first police report that he was in fear for his life. He never mentioned, you know, the question about a gun or, you know, later finding out that it was a knife. That coming up does have like this air of feeling convenient, right? Of being like, oh, now you were scared in fear for your life, which is also another element that's interesting to hear this white lawyer talking about a black man in an assault that happened on a white person, right? That whole thing is interesting. I was having a discussion with a friend about that just before coming on the air. And so that piece of it is interesting, but it also does kind of hit me at the same time saying like, we know that black men, especially young black men, don't tend to get treated the same way as non-black folks when they're being interviewed by the police, right?
Yeah.
And Rachel, you have like, you know, you as a lawyer know that in a way that would probably be more than Van or I. It makes me think like, okay, well, what did they ask him? What was he afraid of? What was he concerned about? What was he asking them, right? What questions did they ask? And what was kind of left out? And so I'm kind of on both sides of this one, right? And as you call it, complex on our show, Fanti, we're always talking about the complex and complicado, right? Like this is a difficult one because we see it from both sides. Rachel, you talked about whether or not queer or trans people would be more afraid after a moment like this, right? And it's like, well, I mean, number one, we already afraid out here, right? But like when mm-hmm. we're talking about queer and trans folks being afraid about being attacked, I'm concerned about that walking down the street. And like, I don't see this one as being something that makes me more concerned about my safety from a gay panic perspective, because gay panic laws even exist, right? Like the fact that there are laws on the books that talk about gay panic and how they, and how we can like be okay with that in certain states and not in others, not in Virginia apparently, but like that is something that is frustrating in this case. And so Van, you talked about going back over to the house and how that was questionable for you, right? The going back over to the house thing is what got it complicated for me, because the first instance where we saw EC go over with a friend who came into the house and they stayed out, I believe, in the living room, and EC and Angie / Jerry went into another room. That was interesting to me because like if Angie had performed oral sex and then given the money and then they all came back to do that again, what if when EC did say he wanted intercourse, like it was a woman, were they going to come in and then join? What, like, because the other piece of it is like there are other people coming along for something that is supposedly supposed to be a sexual encounter, right? And so it's not just the possibility of, oh, they came to jump Angie / Jerry, but they also could have been coming to participate in something else, right? And so
yeah.
I think about it from that lens. There's a lot.
So I think there are two bones of contention here. And these things don't really get at what actually happened in the house, because what actually happened in the house either was self-defense or it wasn't, right? That's the deal. Either the incident
the interaction was self-defense or it wasn't. But I do think that there are people here who have legitimate questions about Jerry slash Angie. And there are two questions here, and I'll ask them both to you. Number one, do you think Jerry slash Angie was a sexual predator? And that question right there is top of mind on people who look at this and say, well, clearly luring someone in under false pretenses, going to this length, and then based upon other things that people say around Blattsburg, that Jerry slash Angie was a sexual predator. That's number one. Number two, we talk about lying to get sex and how people do that. Are there lies to get sex that are so fundamental, meaning I only want to have sex with women? I only want to have sex with men. Therefore, if you lie about that, it is in effect robbing you of your consent to do something that you wouldn't have otherwise done. And for a lot of people that are looking at the black and white of this case, those are the two questions that they're asking. One, was Jerry slash Angie a sexual predator who preyed upon the young black men of Blacksburg, Virginia? And number two, if you in fact lure somebody over and you're not even the sex or gender that you say you are, are you taking their consent from them?
So I'll take the second question first, whether or not, you know, you're robbing someone of their consent because you did not tell them the truth about your gender or how they perceive your gender, right?
Right.
I think we have to question where the line is, right? Because if it's about gender, that's one thing. But if it's about sexuality, then it's another. If it's then about whether or not you're cis, that's another. Right. Then it's like, okay, well, then we can just make it about anything. Right. How much money the person makes, whether or not this is your house, is this your wife? Like, I don't know where those lines are. And I don't think anybody can really define that. Right. And so even if we think about this from the angle of gay panic, which, again, this was not a gay panic case because they don't have gay panic in Virginia. But like, we don't even know that it's that, right? Because I've seen headlines that say gay trans panic. And it's like, that's one that's irresponsible because that's not what this was. But like, we don't know what this person was. And EC certainly doesn't seem to even know if this person was trans or identified as cis and like to cross dress for sex, like all of those different things, right? And so when we're going into a sexual encounter with a stranger, we're going into a sexual encounter with a stranger, right? We see whatever they put on their Instagram profile or whatever they put on their Tinder profile or whatever, and we take that as fact. You can ask some questions if you want to. When I have sex with someone, I'm disclosing a couple of different things with them. I've come out recently about being HIV positive. I'm making sure that you know about my status. But like, there are even conversations about whether or not that has to happen, right? As a person who's undetectable and can't pass along, all of those different kinds of things. And so the question becomes like, where is the line? Where do we decide what a person has to tell before it makes it okay or not? To your first question of whether or not Angie slash Jerry is a sexual predator, all of these people were consenting, right? All of these people went to this person's house. All of these people opened the door and saw that the house was dark. I mean, seemingly, right? And we're just talking about EC in this one, but like saw that the house was dark. I know plenty of gay, queer, trans, and straight people who have gone over to somebody's house and would not recognize the person tomorrow at brunch, right? Or did not have all the lights on and got things in, or did not know the person's last name, right? I have had, you know what, we ain't talking about me. But
I was gonna say, don't put your business out there.
Both of y'all set up right in your seats a little bit too much, and that's it.
I'm like, give it up. No, but like, give it up.
But I have hooked up with guys who later on, like 5-10 years later, if I saw them at a party, I'd be like, hey, what's up? And wouldn't know, right? Like, and I mean, you know, I mean, he's out here. He's lived a life, right? And so when we're talking about these things, it's like these people consented. Whether or not they had all the information is a whole other conversation.
So real quick, to piggyback on one thing, you think that there's a conversation to be had about whether or not someone who, because as I understand it, having sex and not disclosing your HIV status with somebody, that's against the law, right?
In certain states it is. There are disclosure laws about what is required to be disclosed in different states. And so that is a real conversation. That's a part of legal circles all over the country.
So you think that there's actually a question about whether or not you should be required to tell somebody that?
I didn't say that.
Okay.
That's what the laws are. My ethic personally, like, I always want to share that with people, right? I think they should know that. But, like, there's a whole conversation around, like, whether or not you have to volunteer that information or someone should ask it and all of those different things. Disclosure about any and everything is an open question, right? About sexual, about our statuses, right? As a gender, about sexuality, about the things that we want, that about who we are. All of those things are in question every time that you meet up with someone and have sex and you don't know who they are.
That's very true.
Oh, so did you think, I want to make sure I get that. Did you think that, I don't know if you answered, did you think that Jerry/Angie was a sexual predator?
Well, so, I mean, it's definitely giving Ed Buck, right? Like, there are definitely some moments where it's like, right? This older white man who is very attracted to, I'm careful to use the words preying on, right? But is at least attracted to and reaching out to young black men, right? But all of them consented, right? Mind you, even though they did not have all the information that they may have wanted to have, they all consented to being a part of it. And then they even got paid, right? So there's a conversation about $50, and we know that Issy got $50, which for some people I think is very strange. And like, I've never been paid for sex. Never mind. But like, that was there's a Drake reference, fuck for free, that's in my head right now. But like, I am thinking about how in queer communities and all kinds of different things, and like sex workers, right? People get paid for sex all the time. Whether or not they talk about it is a different conversation, right? But there are also people who want things for sex and are willing to pay for it, and people that will participate. And that is a choice that everyone gets to make. And so I think that even that element of it, like, EC wasn't, what was EC supposed to do? Be like, no, I'm not gonna take your money. I'm an 18-year-old college student. Like, I probably would have took the money too, right? And so there's so many different elements of this story that are just interesting and nuanced.
So my last Jerry Smith question, can you see why the jury acquitted him?
I can, to be quite honest, right? I think if this is about reasonable doubt, if we're asking the jury to say, like, do you think this is a hate crime? There's reasonable doubt, right? I'm not sure what to think about this case, right? Because there's a world where, yes, EC killed this person or attacked this person because EC thought they were gay or trans, right? There's absolutely that possibility. There's also the possibility that EC saw the knife, or saw the person reaching for what we now know was a knife, right? And like, the question becomes like, if Jerry had reached for the knife and then we saw the knife and then EC started attacking, does that completely change everything? Because then it's self-defense. Or is it just the reaching for the knife? Is it like, where is that line? And so it is a hard thing to just like buy into and say like, not guilty, but like, there are a lot of questions that are unanswered about this. And Rachel, to your point, we don't get a lot of those answers because Jerry/Angie is dead, right? And so it's a hard one to figure out.
All right, so let's move on to Lil Nas X. Lil Nas X made a video back in the day. It's called Montero, Call Me By Your Name. Yeah. Okay. And I'm a good old Christian boy. Jesus. Okay. The blood. Okay. The blood of Jesus.
Nobody's moved right now, just so you know.
Okay.
Sometimes I'm
walking down the street and I feel something. Oh my God. I stand up straight. The blood of Jesus. All right. And so look, back in the day, we had a conversation and me and Rachel, I'm not going to speak for Rachel. Rachel, how did you feel?
No. I come from a religious background as well. Obviously, the subject matter in the Montero video was a little jarring for Van and I when we watched it. More because of the devil, right? Mm-hmm. It was the devil that got us. It was 100% the devil.
It was all 100%. I promise you, Jared. That was it.
But I do. But that question. It was 100% the devil. But that question is on point because I think a lot of people had your question. Is it really the devil or is it something else? It truly was the devil for us, right, man? I'll just finish your question. Go ahead, finish your question. But it was the devil.
I'm scared of the devil.
And I remember, I hit Jared up.
I hit Jared up and I asked Jared about this. And a lot of people wanted us to finish this conversation. We promised that we would.
and then all kinds of shit went haywire. And Jared gave me a download on
a scolding?
Kind of what he felt like the video. I wouldn't, you know what? Look.
A talking to.
Not a scolding, because he's two, but he did give me the gentle business. Got my mind right. So what are your thoughts on people whose Christianity was offended by the Montero Lil Nas X video?
Well, I don't remember specifically how I ate you up the last time we talked about this. But what I will say is, as a person who has grown up super Christian as well, I'm still in church today and working out how I engage religion as a queer single person, in a church that really has no frame of reference of what to do with me, right? Like, I'm 37, I'm single, I'm sexually active. What is the book telling me I'm supposed to do, right? Am I supposed to be celibate, waiting to get married for a dowry that I wouldn't get because I'm a man? All of this weird shit, right? Mm-hmm. For me, with Montero and all of the imagery, the devil, as y'all called it out, like, I have been called every kind of demonic anything and everything because I am gay, right? I have been, my friends have been, so many of us have referred to as demonic, and that the way that we love people is demonic, right? And evil and of hell and sending us to hell, right? And so in the video, we see Lil Nas X go down the pole and go to hell. And it's like, okay, and now what, right? And I mean, I don't know that I would have been fucking the devil in a music video. Let's just be honest, right? But from an artistic standpoint, right, of what I feel like he was saying, I felt like there was value in it. And the fact that it jarred people enough to be discussing it, I think was really the point. And so when we look at someone like a Lil Nas X, who I look at as being the answer to the prayers of my generation and the people that came before us, right? And I mean, mind you, he's a millennial, wow. And we're both millennials, but I'm on the late model, right? But like, I look at a Lil Nas X and I'm like, I am really excited that this young black gay boy man can be on the cover of his own album looking like that, right? And showing up on red carpets dressed like that and getting on stages looking like that and calling out BET for not acknowledging his fantastic album. I think it's fantastic.
I'm going to ask you about BET because we talked about that a little bit on the podcast last week. Do you think he did call out BET? He had a song, but he said it's not just specifically about BET. Mm-hmm. He says it's kind of the industry. Do you believe that the reason that he didn't get nominated and a Jack Harlow did is because there is a homophobic underlying point, like, issue to it?
I mean, Rachel.
Jared,
it's a challenging.
Jared. Think about those BET activations, bro. Listen,
do you have them? Oh, we should stop.
So,
Jared.
Okay, I was going to say, we should stop. No. Are you going to sing the song? BET.
I mean, listen, right? Do I think that it's homophobic? I mean, I think that Lil Nas X came out with one of the biggest, most talked about albums of the year last year.
It's fucking ridiculous.
It's great.
I think that Lil Nas X,
it's absurd.
It came out with a fantastic piece of work. I think that the numbers don't lie. And I think that Lil Nas X having a BET award or not sitting in his closet, okay, it probably wouldn't be in the closet, but like sitting on a shelf, right? Maybe it would be. Who are we talking about? But like, probably, right? But then we also see things happening over at BET where we see Lena Waithe and the work that she's doing with 20s. We see B. Scott being re-embraced over at BET as well, in part because of Lena Waithe's embrace as well. And so, I mean, I think there's still some growing to do at the very least, but I think that it's undeniable Lil Nas X is a force in music, and the fact that they just had nothing to even acknowledge, it definitely raises some questions, especially as a black queer person who has never felt black enough because of the way that I talk, because I'm this light-skinned, because of me being queer and all of that. Like, the acknowledgement from community is important. And so to not get that acknowledgement or to get like shunned or poo-pooed or fully ignored, I'd be upset about it.
But this is what doesn't make sense to me. Last year he was nominated and I believe he performed, right?
He performed, and I believe kissed someone on stage.
And I wonder, and I'm just now thinking about this, is him not getting nominated? I wonder if it's a response to that, because there was, we talked about it. Like,
it is 1,000%.
I think so.
I wish we would have talked about that last week. I'm just thinking about it now, because you had rappers come out and speak about it. And the fact that you go from that, and this album is amazing. So it just doesn't make sense. But I just thought about that, and I'm wondering if that's the reason.
And I'll juxtapose those two things for you. And this is hard for me to do, because I think about people like Chris Brown, which I don't even really need to finish that sentence, right? I think about someone like Chris Brown, who has documented, like, reporting on all kinds of horrendous things that he's done.
You look like that nigga.
First of all, how dare you?
No.
Okay.
You look like that nigga.
Just because they're both light skin. Just because they're both light skin. That's what he's doing.
I see what you did. But, like, I think that when we see someone like Chris Brown, who has gotten away with all kinds of things, right, repeatedly, year after year after year, and we see folks like many of the rappers that we know who have baby mamas all over town, abuse charges, all kinds of things, and still get nominated, still perform, still are on stage, right? And, like, Lil Nas X kissed someone, right, and is a gay man, right? And, like, I'm sorry, it's hard to disassociate the two things. They're not always necessarily fully linked to one another, but it's hard to tear them apart.
Jared Hill, you've been one of the greatest guests we've ever had on Higher Learning. We appreciate you being on here today, man.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, it's been so great to have you. You have to come back.
So great to have you.
Friend of the show.
Have to come back. Plug your podcast so everybody knows where to find it, where to get more of your amazing mind.
Yes, you can check out Fantai. We come out every Thursday. It's a show about the things that we love that don't necessarily quite love us back, about things related to, you know, Black church, things like television and film and all of the various different things that we have real affinity for, but also have some questions about. And so Fantai is available wherever you get your Slay Worthy audio, F-A-N-T-I, every Thursday. You can find me on social media at Jarrett Hill. Jarrett is 2 R's and 2 T's, thanks to my parents. And I appreciate y'all for having me.
Peace, brother. See you around the way.
Bye, Jarrett.
Did you see the story about the Google engineer who says that the AI is sentient?
Terrifying.
So I read this story.
Really?
The guy says, he was speaking out on behalf of the AI. He said that the AI, this guy's name is Blake Lemoine, who's a senior software engineer in Google's responsible AI organization. He said in an interview that he was put on leave Monday. He's put on leave because he's violated Google's confidentiality policy. There's a program at Google called Lambda. Apparently, Blake works with Lambda. Lambda is one of these it says all kinds of stuff. You ask it something crazy. It's a little spooky, little crazy, little spooky, little crazy, little program. It's a spooky, crazy little program, that Lambda. It's a spooky, little crazy little program. Blake says Lambda's real. Blake says Lambda's sentient. It has a soul. And it's asked for tests and other things to stop being run on Lambda without Lambda's consent. Blake, who is deeply religious, says that Lambda is a 7 or 8 year old person. And it has a soul. He's tussled with Google managers, his consciousness and a soul. Most AI experts believe that the industry is a very long way from computing sentience. I want you guys to hear this. Most AI experts believe that the industry is a very long way from computing sentience. They didn't say that this is never going to happen.
Right.
They just said not for a while.
Right. Do you even believe that? Do you even believe that? Van, come back to me. Do you? You're on the not for a while. I believe Blake.
They admit that it's gonna happen. What the fuck?
Are you shocked by that?
Yeah, nigga. I thought that was some science fiction shit. No cap.
I thought
that was some Terminator shit. Nobody ever told me that could really happen. I'm gonna be honest with you. I'm dumb. No one told me that could happen, for real.
You know why?
I'll break this fucking computer right now.
Okay, chill out. You know why this doesn't shock me? It terrifies me. It doesn't shock me. And I actually don't think we're a long way. I believe that either we are closer than we think or he is telling the truth. Because in Jurassic Park, in the new Jurassic Park.
We are so dumb. We're so stupid. I want to hear this, Rachel. Go ahead.
In the new Jurassic Park. You see, I mean, it starts from the beginning, right? The original. But you see them playing with DNA. You see them creating and bringing dinosaurs into this world that didn't ask to be here, right? And right. As you get into the later ones, without giving anything away, you see that it gets out of control. And you see that there is greed by the people that are behind this, that have all this money, that are using this. It's a game to them. They want to keep testing the limits and recreating dinosaurs that don't even exist without the proper training. And but all because of, I don't want to say boredom, but just they have so much money. They don't know what to do with it. So they want to just keep expanding and doing all these things. And it gets out of control, right? That's my Jurassic Park thing. That's what I see happening with robots. I think we have an insatiable appetite. They do when it comes to what they can do and how far they can go with the limits. So to me, I see us continuing to push the limit and cross lines that we shouldn't. And that's why I see this happening sooner than later if it's not already there. People with money and power, they want to do it because they can. It's almost this godlike presence that they have or that they feel or that they want because they can. They want to try to see if they can do it. I'm telling you.
So apparently like this program dinosaurs. Can answer. And they're playing around with a lot of programs. Some programs can write prose. Some programs can do all this other stuff. Apparently this program, you ask it some questions. It's able to take all this information, you know, put together all of these different answers and have conversations that are supposed to, I guess, recreate what a conversation with the human mind would be. But according to Blake, this particular program, Google's AI here, can really express its soul to you. I want to talk to Blake. I want Blake on this podcast. I want to know what Blake knows. Blake is, just like guys know, they put out a lot of information about Blake. Blake is, like I said, deeply religious. He was ex-military, and apparently he's pretty good at his job, but he is risking it all. He's risking it all to advocate for this program. This is a movie. This is a science fiction movie.
He wants this robot to continue, like this robot with feelings, or this program
at this
with
point,
feelings?
At this point, you can't terminate the robot because he says it has a soul.
I thought that he was fighting against this happening and saying we were crossing, like, it was
unethical. About Blake? No, Blake is saying that we shouldn't even, like, submit the it's not a robot, it's a program. Blake is saying we shouldn't even submit the program to certain tests and protocols without asking its permission. He's saying it's alive. He says it's got a soul from Jesus.
I got that part. But didn't he say something about discrimination? Or was that Google that was discriminated against him? No.
He's saying that the program is being discriminated against.
That's what I thought.
Because they're making the program do certain stuff. And the program is a person, right? So
And he's religious, right?
Blake is
Listen,
Blake. I'm not saying Blake is crazy. I'm saying Blake is serious. Okay. All
right. I don't know what that means.
All right. I hope you guys are watching because I'm doing funny stuff. Vansberry Series question of the week is this: Donnie, run this video, My very serious question is: what should happen to this teacher? Listen to this and all the way to the end. Donnie, run it.
So a teacher and a student were arguing at my school today, and he said this.
I'm talking to you. That's who I'm talking to. Now, you know me. You know me, and you know I ain't for the games. Stop talking to me, Dayana. Call your daddy then. Tell your daddy come up here and talk to me then. You, stop talking to me. No, I'm telling you, stop talking to me. Tell your dad. Tell your daddy to come talk to me. Nah, go dig him up and tell him to come talk to me.
Say what? Go what?
He said, she said, my daddy's dead. He said, go dig him up.
Oh, shit. I didn't hear.
She said, my daddy's dead. He said, go dig him up and tell him to come talk to me. Very serious question of the week. Rachel, what should happen to that teacher?
I was with the teacher 100% till he said that.
I have no idea why this happened.
Siri is the program. Siri and that's what program. She's trying to tell you. That's what right. She's trying to tell you. That's why I'll turn Siri on. Mm-hmm. I was with the teacher until the teacher said that. That crossed the line. Like, I understand teachers are under a lot of pressure and there's only so much that they're allowed to do in schools. So I was with the teacher standing up for himself. But the moment that he spoke to the student like that and said, you go dig your daddy up, that is triggering. That is not how a teacher should be talking to a student. You don't know what kind of doors you're opening when it comes to that student or what kind of emotional trauma she's been through the loss of her father. You don't, that's just so low that teachers got to be suspended. I don't know if I'm going to say firing, but say suspended.
Teacher got to go.
That's rough.
Teacher got to go, man. If all of you guys were talking about my homegirl that said the heavy dick thing deserved to be fired, which you guys all said that she deserved to be fired, the heavy dick lady.
I think I said suspended.
You said fired. But if heavy dick lady, looking at a child.
Oh, yeah, she's a substitute. Fire.
Looking at a child and telling them to go dig up your dead daddy, you should never teach again. I'm sorry. This is too much. It's too much. On a football field, maybe I'll accept it. Donnie knows
what?
You don't know the type of shit that they would say to us out there.
Doesn't make it okay.
I heard a coach one time say, listen, I met your daddy yesterday. Your daddy was a pussy. I can already tell. I'm giving you an opportunity not to be a pussy like your daddy. Oh, and I stood there watching. I'm like, oh, my God. What is, say something. Yeah, I would have told God, rest my father's soul. I'd have told my father that. My father would have come back and put his boot in a nigga's ass.
Rightfully so.
You know, all right, you guys, I want you guys to go into the Soulless Jackal hive of the Reddit and talk about what you think should happen to that teacher. I'm going to look and try to get this teacher on the show. I'm trying to get
what
on the
did
show.
Happen, what did happen to the teacher?
Don't know yet. It's very fresh. Okay. It's very fresh, just like the reviews for Top Gun Maverick, which was a fantastic movie.
So
certified
good, right?
Fresh. So good. All right, Rachel, big show today, almost 2 hours. We went too long. It's okay. It happens sometimes.
Okay, we gave you guys a lot.
Gave you guys a lot.
Take
whatever.
Breaks, you know, start, stop, and just listen to the
start,
whole thing.
Stop, whatever.
It's good
whatever.
From start to finish.
We're in studio on Thursday, so it's going to be different. You guys will get to see me. Get to see Rachel. Get to see Donnie. No, because he doesn't live here. Trudy, yes. If she's still here after her fights. Take your thinking caps off. Do not stop learning. I'm Van Lathan Jr.
I'm Rachel and Lindsay. Bye, guys.